buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Or welcome to our show, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to be here till noon. We're talking about car repair, estimates, symptoms analysis, actual repairs. What do I do if I paid a bunch of money to fix my car and they didn't fix it? How should I make myself look special to my shop? I don't think we've ever touched base on that. That's my wife, Renee. And so those kinds of things, anything car related, 602-508-0960. If you want to get in early, you can. We've got five lines. Gil runs the board. He'll be saying good morning to you. You'll give him your name. And what I'd like you to do is just give me your make and model and mileage of the car, and then we'll talk symptoms. Or if it's unrelated to symptoms, then, you know, tell your story and we'll get to the question. So again,
Brad is your first caller, Brad.
508-0960. Let's go to Brad real quick, and he's a quick on the draw.
That's good, because sometimes it gets too long and we can't get him in.
Yep. Brad, good morning to you, buddy. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. Hey, I have a 2007 Freightliner Sprinter, 3-liter diesel, 130,000 miles. I got a code on it. It was the mass airflow code, and so I put a new mass airflow sensor in it, and now I'm getting the code that mass or airflow circuit range performance problem.
How much did that mass airflow sensor cost you?
$142.
Okay. Well, I can tell you right now that probably 75% of the time it's not the mass airflow sensor. So,
all right.
There was a cute little cartoon sent to me the other day, and it's got the ASE certification patch, but it says, what is that?
YouTube
expert or something like that. here's what happens a lot of times. The mass airflow sensor is supposed to measure the amount of air that the engine is inhaling. What happens is the tubes that go from where the mass airflow sensor is to the throttle blades, to where that mouth of the motor is, those things develop cracks in them. Or they're loose, or they've been slightly displaced. So the engine knows that when the throttle's on the floor and the ground is level, it should see 60 grams of air flying down the throat of that motor, and for whatever reason, yours is reading 32. So the first thing you have to do is go in and inspect the entire ductwork from the mouth of the motor all the way past the air filter. Now, the mass airflow sensor is going to be between the air filter and the mouth of the motor. So then the second thing you'd want to do on the mass airflow sensor after 130,000 miles is you'd want to get some mass airflow sensor cleaner inside the mouth, inside the heart of that mass airflow sensor, because it's just a tube with a little bitty wire in the middle. And that little bitty wire glows bright red, and as the more air that goes across it, then the more it cools down and the more amperage it has to draw to. So it's actually the computer's reading the amperage necessary to keep that thing at this level. So in your particular case, and I want you to think about this. You and I are mass airflow sensors, and you're buck naked on a cold morning, and I'm wearing all kinds of clothes. So how do you feel versus what do I feel? Well, the mass airflow sensor wire, yours might have been full of clothes, and it really needs to be naked. Stop shaking your head.
Where do you come up with this stuff?
If I were you, the first thing I'd do is I'd check all the ductwork, maybe take it apart and look at it, stick a flashlight inside of it. I'd clean the old mass airflow sensor, put it back on, pull the negative cable for, you know, a minute or two, and go drive it and see what happens. Somebody's going to have to plug a scanner into that. Someone's going to have to see if it's within range. But what's ironic is the two codes are different, yes? The first code was mass airflow sensor. The second code said it was higher or lower than it should be.
Right.
Okay, so you got two separate issues there.
Right. Right, but since I changed the mass airflow sensor, it's switch from one code to a different code. So
I'm gonna ask you. There are three tiers of automotive parts. Where do you think? I'm not asking you where you bought it because I don't want to get in trouble. But if there's three tiers of automotive stuff, and we talk about the dealers being first, according to most people, they wouldn't be first on my list.
Yeah.
Then the second place would be name brands like Felpro and Delco and Hitachi and all that kind of stuff. And then the third group is maybe you find on the corner something. Where did you buy that mass airflow sensor? Because I want to tell you something. I would have bet you spent $300 or $400 for that mass airflow sensor, and your $140 is just. I'm struggling with that.
Well, the original mass airflow sensor was a Bosch.
Okay.
And this mass airflow sensor that I put in it is a Bosch also. Numbers on it exactly. So.
Okay, well, I'm surprised. There's all kinds of counterfeit parts out there. Hopefully the box looks like another Bosch box.
Well, what I did, I found a price, and I had AutoZone match the price.
Okay.
So I found a price from AutoHouse online, and they were $142, so I had AutoZone match that. So,
okay.
And AutoHouse was a Bosch, and AutoZone was a Bosch, so...
Okay.
So at this point, I'm up on the Cactus and 51. Who in this area are good with Sprinters?
Well, it's not a Sprinter. Your mass airflow sensor is no different than every other car out there. It's a matter of just whoever's got a scanner that's capable of looking at what effectively is a Mercedes-Benz, right?
Right.
Okay. So whoever has a scanner, whoever can go out and drive it, and whoever can look up some minimum and maximum airflows through it, that's all that needs to be done. But you're going to spend, you're likely to spend more on the diagnostic than you've already spent for the $140 on the mass airflow sensor. So I'm thinking that out of spec is still a possibility of the air duct work you've got. And you got 130,000 miles on it, and it's an 07, so it's 10 years old, 130,000 miles, a lot of heat and cold cool-offs. What do we call those?
Heat cycles.
Heat cycles. Thank you very much for that. Heat cycles. So, I'd look there before you spend a bunch of money. But to answer your question, Kelly Clark over at 41st Street, 42nd Street, and Bell Road would be my first choice.
Right.
If you're going to go west, then you go over to either Kurtz Automotive at Bell and I-17, or you go up to Action Auto at Deer Valley and I-17. Any one of those three guys, I'd call them first, because they may not have a Mercedes-Benz scanner or a Sprinter scanner. But call them first, and any one of those three guys should handle it, okay?
I appreciate it, Mark. Have a good day.
You betcha.
But Chris is your next caller.
On the west side, Larry Harker's Auto Repair is one of those guys that he's a diagnostician extraordinaire. Now, I'm pretty good on the radio because I've been on the radio since 1988, but I think Bob at Larry Harker's Auto may be a tad better than I am at certain times because he had more tenacity than I have. And I don't really need to have that tenacity because I've got... But anyway, he's really good. And there's been a couple of cars or trucks that people have called me about that I don't really have time. But on the other hand, I had Bob at Larry Harker's Auto. So I sent two people to Bob, and he hit a home run on both of them. So if you're one of those people that starts off the conversation with Mark Salem at... I've had it to everybody in town, and nobody's been able to fix it, and I've spent $812.53, or something like that. That's how the conversation sounds. I'm going to send you to Bob at Larry Harker's Auto. So he's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's been around since 1967, so he wasn't born yesterday, and he's got more than three whiskers on his face. That's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Okay, Gil, what was the name of the caller?
Chris.
Chris, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Hi, Mark. I have a 2003 Silverado 2500 diesel, 89,000 miles. The gauges, my speedometer gauge, my battery gauge or altimeter gauge, my water gauge, speedometer, tachometer, they're not functioning. They're dead. The transmission cooler gauge is working. So is the fuel gauge. And so is my water temperature gauge.
Okay.
What's going on?
Well, there's a couple of things that can be going on. You could actually need a certain part of your dash panel, and I can't remember what the name of it is right now, but they have a name for the specific area of a General Motors dash panel that controls some of the gauges, but not all of the gauges. So the first thing that someone's going to want to do is pull the panel and plug it back in, because a bad connection at the back of the panel. Then the question to you is, hey, Chris, over the next 10 days, how do we do? And so you're going to have to analyze that. That's kind of a wasted effort, but there's a 50% chance that's going to do it. The second thing that you would do then is I'd probably go to Dick's, or I'd call Dick's Speedo and Tack up on 7th Street and Indian School North, and give them your symptoms and ask them, stepper motor. Remember stepper motor. Ask him if this is a symptom that he can fix.
2 minutes.
The third possibility is you call around to a bunch of shops and you say, when you pull a dashboard out of a General Motors car that has some gauges working and some gauges not, where do you send it? And there's somebody in town. I don't have the information in front of me, but there's somebody in town here that does the work, and most of us go through that person. So there, and if there's three people between you and that facility, he may not do retail work. He may not do customer work. But if there's three people between that facility and you, I can assure you there's markup one, markup two, markup three. So you want to kind of shortcut that a little bit. The last thing is that you may need a reflash, and that's a situation where we connect your car to the cloud and we download new software. And that's
remember, this 2003, Mark, it's 2003. Are we still talking about technology?
Yep. Okay. Yep. And that's going to cost you $128 at most places. And really and truly, it's $85 to attach to the cloud. And we take a laptop and we hook it up to your car, and then we pay money to go to the cloud. We tell them what we want, and we say, hey, cloud, would you look this truck over? And the cloud comes back and says, yeah, everything looks fine. What's the matter, Mark? Well, I'm having dashboard problems. Will you reflash the dash? Yes, I will. Hey, Mark, I found a new updated software for the transmission. Do you want that? Well, I'm going to call Chris and say, hey, Chris, you having any transmission problems? Because as everybody knows, sometimes updates cause problems you didn't have before. So I'm not making that decision for Chris. I'm going to let Chris make that decision.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So,
but let me add this to the equation. I talked to my service advisor where I bought my truck, and I won't say where I bought my truck. I'm not going to give him a commercial.
Okay.
And he told me that this was a common problem in my series of GM trucks, and he says that I need to replace the entire panel at about $500.
Okay. Well, I can tell you, not too long ago, a guy took his car to a shop, and then he took his car to another shop, and the shop reflashed the dash panel, and the problem was fixed. And one estimate was $600-$700, and the other car, the repair was less than $200. So, you know, you're on your own, buddy. You're on your own. I think the big fear here is you can't replace the dash panel without changing the odometer. And that's a problem, because you have to have a high level of security to do that. And frankly, there's not a lot of people that can do that. So the idea of going just unplugging your dash panel and plugging a new one in, there's a big problem with that because of the mileage. So, all right, Chris, thank you, Greg. I got to run. Thank you very much, buddy. 1017, if you'd like to join us, you can. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Mark and Renee Salem, at your service. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. It is exactly 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're here talking about car and car repair, all that kind of stuff. So if you'd like to join us, you certainly can. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Taylor, do you hang on? I got about 20 seconds before I'm coming to you. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil has been in the Valley since 1968. him and his staff can do diagnostics. They can do the smallest transmission repair, which might be a rear tranny mount causing a clunk on a shift, or all the way up to replacing the, or rebuilding the entire transmission. Every transmission is thoroughly tested using their new state-of-the-art dynamometer. So if you live in Central Phoenix, Automatic Transmission Exchange, we call it ATE, is located at 40th Street in Washington, and now they're open on Saturdays from 8 to 12 so that you can stop by. They'll take a ride with you. If you can demonstrate the problem, you show them the problem, then they're going to want to switch places, and they're going to want to drive it to feel and test the car, because we can actually test the car's, you know, operation while we're driving the car much better than sitting in the passenger seat and telling you what to do. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Taylor, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. Automatic Transmission Exchange has done great work for me over the years. They've done a couple of transmission transfer cases and axles, so I've been real happy with them.
Good to hear that.
I've got a 1999 Chevy Suburban. It's got an oil leak on it, and I heard you talking about a buddy of yours that had a vehicle with an oil leak, and what he did is put newspaper underneath the vehicle and left it overnight. So I did that. Last night I put some newspaper underneath my truck, and this morning I backed up the truck, and the oil spots are right on B6, right above the crossword puzzle.
Okay. And you want me to tell you where they're at?
That's a joke, Mark.
You missed the part about we need to draw a line on the paper where the windshield is, and then we're going to move from there.
I'm just kidding. That was just a joke. But I've got a weird car. I've got a 2005 Chrysler Crossfire. It's a weird Mercedes-Benz Chrysler product. Made in Germany, Mercedes engine and stuff. And every shop I call, I got a Crossfire. Y'all work on it? They're like, we've seen one of those before. And I've looked online, and the Dodge, the Chrysler dealerships are getting terrible reviews for working on them, you know, in the little, you know, cross-section of people that have Crossfires. Any idea what might be a good shop to try?
Well, yeah, you have to change the question.
Problem, but I want to find a problem. I mean, I want to find a shop.
You have to change the question.
Okay, go ahead.
This question, you're not asking the right question. If you have a problem, then the question is have you been successful diagnosing a suspension problem, a vibration problem, a cold start problem on a Crossfire? The second thing is do you do oil changes on a Crossfire? Can you do brakes on a Crossfire? Can you drain and fill my transmission? Can you identify an oil leak I've got on it? Stuff like that. So your question is defective. You have to be specific, because when we start talking about crossovers like Chrysler and Mercedes-Benz and the Sprinter we had earlier in Mercedes-Benz, and then you got General Motors, you got Chevrolet, you got Buick and Pontiac, you got all these other players, then you have to be specific. I don't put my money on any kind of reviews. I looked at a company the other day that I was thinking about doing business with them, and they had terrible reviews. But I was going to order a float for my septic tank for $31. So I went ahead and ordered the float, and they sent me an email within 3 minutes and said, we got your order. And your credit card went through. And then in another 3 minutes, they sent me an email, said, we just shipped it. And I got it 36 hours later from Milwaukee, I think it was. So I can't complain about them. So I felt obligated to go on there and say, you know, on this date at this time, I had a really good instance. I don't know. It's common sense on reviews that the people that are most aggravated are the people that are most likely to go on and be aggravated. The other people just don't really have time in their lives to sit down and write a nice review about Mark Salem or about your business or about Renee's horsey business or whatever. So it's I don't know. I don't know how to take that. However, as a business person, and most of us, all of us do, we watch our reviews. We respond to our reviews. But my biggest problem in a review is I get a nasty review, and in a public way I said, you know, I don't have your name in my database. I have 34,000 customers, 38,000 customers, and I don't have Joe Schmo So if you'll just give me the repair order number, then I can investigate your complaint where one of my service riders asked you if you wanted to have their baby. And I never get an answer.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm exaggerating.
Yeah, you think?
That's never happened before.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I'm drawing a mental picture. You know, you need to get with radio because we don't have the visual part of radio.
Yes.
And so you have to describe things with your mouth. Now, there's a lot of people out there laughing because of that. And there's nobody that's mad because I said that.
Really?
Yeah. And if they are, 602-508-0960. Or go someplace and flame me. I don't care.
Okay.
So anyway, I just think now the maintenance part of that is going to be simple. The parts accessibility might be
2 minutes
slightly different than some other cars. Slightly different. I know Kurt's Auto wouldn't have any problem with this. I know Action wouldn't have any problem with this. I know we wouldn't have any problem with this. I know Mike over at Fenno's in Tempe, Northwest,
Schumann's.
Northeast,
yeah.
Schumann's. I know he wouldn't have any problem with this. Mm-hmm. What part of town are you in?
I've used Kurt's over the years.
Yeah.
And they are one of the shops that are like, that said, we've seen one of those before. We'd be happy to take care of it for you.
Well, I don't have access.
Yeah,
I don't have access to my database right now. I could look up on a Crossfire, and I could tell you how many we've had. But I can tell you right now, Kurtz, you have to throw the gauntlet down at Kurtz. You have to say to Jeff, you know, I got this Crossfire, and everybody's scared to death of this thing. And so I'm looking for somebody that has a spine. I'm looking for somebody that has a good fundamental knowledge of spark, fuel, and compression. I'm looking for somebody who's going to be honest with me and tell me, hey, we're not the best ones to do this. Jeff, do you have any idea who that might be? And that's going to get you better than anything else. Jeff's a master technician himself. So, but anyway, well, thank you for that. That was a good conversation. And anybody else, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Renee's sitting here next to me. Our marriage for 43 years has been this. First of all, I married her when she was 10. That'll answer a lot of your questions. Number two, we are known as Jack the Ripper and Snow White. So she wouldn't say a bad word if she had a mouthful of horse manure.
Only to you.
And that's true.
Yeah.
That is exactly.
Take all my anger out on you.
And we will pick up on that conversation on the underside of this break. I'm Mark Salem. She's Renee. We'll be back after this. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem and Renee Salem at your service. We're sitting here talking about car repair issues. And if you'd like to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960, and we're here to talk about car repair issues, and all kinds of stuff like that. So you're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. So we're talking about the way it's been.
Yeah. I don't know where you got, you know, Snow White and Jack the Ripper, but whatever.
Actually, somebody else coined
that. No, they didn't,
yeah.
Mark.
Yeah,
that was you.
Nope, somebody else coined it.
That was you.
Nope. Because... Everybody thinks you're Snow White. Are. You haven't said a bad word in all your life, except to me.
Right. And my friend Linda.
In front of your friend Linda.
That's right.
You wouldn't call her any names, but you use bad words in front of her.
That's right.
And so, yeah, that's kind of what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about that. I don't think I've ever heard you say anything nasty about anybody. You just kind of roll your eyes, and I can tell that. I mean, that's kind of a spectrum right there. But,
yeah, mostly about you.
Well, I get that all the time. But when we're talking about another situation or another whatever.
Okay.
And so our kids have followed us as well. Mm-hmm. We have Andy, who is kind of a mix between you and I.
Right.
Firm, polite. And everything in between.
Diplomatic,
Diplomatic at times, and other times brutally honest. And then we have Alan, who follows you. He wouldn't say poop if he had a mouthful.
Yes.
He's a kind, young man that's a giant of a man. And
he doesn't have to use bad words and stuff. Look at him and go, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And then we've got Allison that follows right after you.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh boy, she's
poor Allison.
Yeah, she's rough and tumble. Mm-hmm. She's tough. She doesn't cut anybody any slack. She'll be the first to raise her hand if you make her mad or if you say something she doesn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not as bad as I am, though.
Mm. No, probably not. She's not quite as bad as you.
Yeah, but and I think I got it from my mother. I think more than likely my mother. And we talk about this in front of other people because there are times in our business that I've had to explain to somebody that their parameters aren't my parameters. And I'll give you a good example. Not too long ago, Andy called us and said, I have bad news for you. And I hate those calls.
Yes.
And I said, okay, so what happened? And she says, well, Alan just tossed his first customer. And I said, well, that's not really bad news, but I hope it's not somebody who's got a customer number that's two-digit or three-digit.
Right.
And she says, no, it was a brand-new customer. And I said, okay, give me the particulars.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, okay, I'm working the front counter. Now, keep in mind, my daughter is, like, running the operation. Alan is running the shop. So they're both – but actually, Andy runs Alan.
Okay.
So she's – Andy
– like I run you.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
So the lady comes up to the counter, and she says something like this. I've had my car to everybody in town, and nobody's able to fix my car. I filed Better Business Bureau complaints on almost all of them, and I've challenged the credit card charges on almost all of them. And I want you to take my car, and I'm not going to pay you until I know you fixed it. So I'm going to give you my car. I'm not going to pay you. I'm going to drive it for some period of time, and then if it's good, I'm going to come pay you, and if it's not, I'm not coming back.
That's a little embellished because I did hear I was down there when she came in.
Okay, well, tell me, clean it up then.
Well, she didn't say she was going to take it and not pay, but okay. She was going to stop payment if it didn't work right. And then she was going to file a Better Business Bureau complaint. And as she's sitting in the lobby, she's calling the police on someone that pulled out in front of her on the road as she was pulling in or something. So she was just a problem lady that we didn't even want to start working on her car, which we didn't.
Okay, so then Andy says, thank you. And go ahead, finish up. You only got a minute and a half.
No, Alan just, the service writer said, what do I do? And Alan just said, I'll take care of this. And then they buttoned up her car and then they... you know, pulled it out front, and Alan said, ma'am, I'm sorry, we won't be able to help you. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Did she run over him on her way out?
No, but if she was out there, she might have.
Okay, so that's kind of, and I'm surprised that Alan took that, because he's not typically that way.
Right.
And I didn't know, when she called me, that the car had actually made it into the bays. I thought the car was still out in the front parking lot.
No, I think they barely pulled it in.
1 minute.
And she started in about all the Better Business Bureau stuff.
So we already had a work order on it. We had already created a customer file and all that kind of, because she was a new customer. So, and folks, all of us have software that we're going to just punch in and say, don't ever work for this customer again. So you're not going to sneak in the back door, and your license plate's going to pop you up. Your VIN number's going to pop you up. Your phone numbers are going to pop you up. So it's that kind of a deal. But that doesn't happen very often. But I can tell you, in our industry, it does happen.
Sure it does.
There are times we have to fire customers who have unintended expectations, or they're holding us to a standard of other people, other shops, or other experiences.
Right, or they come in yelling at you and they just assume that's the way they're going to get anything done. They don't try talking nice to you. They just automatically scream at you from the get-go. So,
well, if they scream at you, they probably are going to get something, but if they get scream at me, they're going to get escorted to the front
door. They're
going to
get something else, yeah.
602-508-0960. You got a car question, a car problem, or anything like that at all. When we come back, we're going to talk about the guy who had a whole bunch of motor work done. He has an old international truck, and an hour and 12-minute phone conversation with him the other day.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's a sad story, but some of it is his fault. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that right after this. Well, it's 44 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock.
You're having trouble with time today.
Well, there's a lot
you?
Of fours on my screen. It was 44 minutes and 44 seconds or something like that. So, anyway, 44 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, we're going to be here for another hour, but there's plenty of time to get on. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. Tom is located at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. He owns a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop, and he's served Deer Valley in the North Phoenix area since 1983. Whatever your repair needs are, you can visit Tom and his staff for quality workmanship, excellent customer service, and a pretty doggone fast turnaround time. Now, your technicians are going to be ASE Master Certified technicians. That means they know how to diagnose the problem, repair the problem, bid the problem, and then test drive the car to verify the problem's gone. That's what a master does. So, if you, as a vehicle owner, want to deal with a shop that's going to have good communication, this is what we're doing and why, then Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley is a great place to go. Kevin, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning. I got a question on an old car. If you can pull this off. I'm having starter problems with it.
Okay.
And normally what it is, it's an old Firebird, and it's got a Corvette motor, and it's that old 327 motor in it.
Okay.
And the motor's pretty built, and I bought it. But when I go to start it, it sounds like the solenoid's not engaging. You know, it'll go quick, but it's still grabbing, and then it'll start. And I've adjusted the shim. It's got a long run. The battery's in the trunk, so it has a long run over to the starter. And I can't figure it out. I've been pulling my hair out for a while trying to figure it out.
Okay.
So I don't know any other information I can give you to help you out on that.
All right. Well, you have to do a volt drop test, first of all. So you're going to have to go back to the battery, and you're going to have to take a voltage reading off the battery before you ever try to start it. And then you're going to leave your positive attached, and you're going to start touching all the grounds in the trunk area and hopefully even to the frame. Now, if you got 12.8 straight at the battery, you better get 12.8 every place you move that ground, every single place. Now, if you took that ground and went to the frame, then you got to fix that problem, because the frame's not grounded to the motor, because the motor sits on three rubber pillows. So you've got to ground the frame to the engine. So if you did ground the frame, then you got to get another battery cable and go from up front to the frame to the motor. So after we do a volt drop test, we're going to move positive. We're going to hang on to the positive side of the battery and boom, 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 touch the engine, touch the firewall, touch the frame, touch everything, even if we have to use long wires to do it. Then we're going to put the negative on the negative side of the battery, and we're going to go up and touch the power supply to your General Motors starter with the solenoid on the top. And if the battery says 12.8, when we touch the starter terminal at the 12 o'clock position on the solenoid, it better say 12.8. Now, after you do this volt drop test, I'm pretty sure you're missing the ground. But the other thing is going to be is you're going to put your voltmeter on the battery, and when you hit the key, if it drops anywhere near 9.6 volts, you got a problem with probably the battery or the starter's asking for too many amps, because 9.6 is the line. You drop below 9.6, I don't care what happens, you're in bad shape. You're not going to start the car, and you're going to have problems. So 9.6 is that automatic level. Under the best of conditions, you might drop from 12.8, a fully charged battery, or 12.9 or 13 volts, a fully charged battery, down to 11.5, maybe 11.8. It also depends on this high-performance 327 motor you have. Does it have a distributor, and if so, what kind of distributor does it have?
Oh, I'm trying to think.
Is it an AGI?
I know the battery. MSD?
Okay, MSD. You're going to want to pull some connection, disconnect the distributor when it's cranking over. If it cranks over normally, when the distributor's disconnected and you connect the distributor and it goes, ruh, 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 that means you have too much timing in the car. So by disconnecting the distributor, that'll answer that. Okay?
Yeah, it's a brand new battery, so that's not a problem. And I know it's grounded to the frame from the engine block. But they've got to check all the positives and negatives.
Okay, when you got to do a volt drop test, and you know you can say that it's a new battery, and so you're going to skip all that stuff. But I wish I had a nickel for every time I installed a new battery, and then the customer was towed in the next day, and the brand new battery out of the box, you know, had died on the shelf somewhere, and although it had a green eye and 13 volts in it, didn't mean it was good. So I don't think you ought to skip that step, but nevertheless. But thank you very much, Kevin. Good luck to you, buddy.
All right.
Felix, you're up next. Felix, how can I help you?
Hey there, Mark. How about explaining what a constant velocity transmission is? I remember one of your shows, you had mentioned it, and I kind of blew it off, but I was looking at a car recently, and it said it had a constant velocity transmission in it.
The constant velocity transmission is like a snowmobile. It doesn't have any gears. It has two pulleys, and the belt rides down low, or as the pulleys go faster, the belt rides higher. So it just basically is a snowmobile transmission. It's like a Polaris with any kind of a belt drive, and there is no yin gears kind of thing. On the low end, when you come off the throttle, it's going to give you a low gear ratio, but as the belt, again, rides, and you have two pulleys. You got a small one. Are you an engineer?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I don't need to I'm needed to explain it for all the other people. There's two pulleys, a small one and a big one. And, of course, when we're running the small one fast and the big one slow, that's first gear. Then when we turn around and we start driving the big one slow and the small one really fast, then that's high gear. How'd I do?
You did good.
He's still an engineer.
I know he is. I know. Pegged him right from the call.
I got, he's
from his name.
He's an engineer.
Hi, Felix.
Yeah.
Hello. Now, and they're reliable, they're good or bad, or it doesn't matter. I mean, they work.
I'm going to change your question. Mark, would you buy a CVT transmission? And
there
I would say, no, I wouldn't, and neither would Renee, or we'd be in divorce court. First of all, when they go bad, nobody can fix them. So you're stuck with a crate one out of a very expensive warehouse. And nobody can diagnose them. Nobody can fix them. Nobody can fix any problem on those. And the fix on those is let's replace it. And so when you start talking about a transmission out of the box that might be $4,000-$6,000, that's before the shop marks it up. Just a minute, Felix. That's before we install that Hummer. Then, no. There. And, you know, the fuel economy and all that kind of stuff, it's so insignificant that a CVT transmission, it's for the tree huggers, Felix, and it's from the people in the Washington, Oregon area. It's from the people up there who don't shave their legs, okay? So Felix, if I offended your wife, I'm sorry, and she wants a CVT, but your question is I wouldn't buy one ever. All right?
Right, that's what I had. I recall that you had said something bad about him the last time around. Okay, thanks to you. All right,
you bet. And it's
Bye.
Not it's not it's. I do have vehicles with CVT transmissions.
You
the
do
big, the big six seater Polaris, the one we take out in the forest.
Right,
that's a CVT.
Okay,
and then that's that 850 Polaris we have. That's a CVT. And Lexi's quad from Suzuki, that's a CVT, but they only come in CVT.
Okay.
Okay.
That, so you lied. You would never buy one.
I had to buy them if I wanted that.
I had to.
But it didn't come with a 4-speed or a 3-speed.
Okay.
All right. And then as far as Lexi's is concerned, my granddaughter, the reason I wanted her to get her away from that Honda that had a 4-speed is she kept blowing up the motor on it.
Yeah.
So the kids don't understand that when you put them in third gear, they don't understand the motor going or going because they don't hear that.
Right.
They don't know that. So how many times did she bend the valves by taking that motor into an RPM range it had no business being in?
Yeah, I think a couple of the kids did that.
No, you're right. Yeah.
It wasn't just the girl. It was a boy, too.
I think she did it twice.
But,
okay, and Mark and Rex did it at least once, and they wouldn't admit who was driving it.
Yeah.
But her Suzuki has a CVT. Now, the CVT, the only time we've ever had a problem is that we know that we were pulling a harrow out in the pasture, and we were going on and off the throttle, and we cupped the belt, so it had a chatter to it. So I put a new belt on her. Actually, I paid somebody to put a new belt on it because they could do it cheaper than I could do it, and the problem was solved, but I kept the old belt.
Is that why that Polaris used to always make that noise, too?
That chatter, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or it would
and
make
that
squealing noise.
Well,
yeah.
And that was Alan's fault because he took it out. Remember that time he took that other Polaris out, and then he calls me and he says, do we have any callers, Gil?
Oh, Gil's taking a caller right now.
Okay. All right. Do you remember one time my son.
Lines are open.
Okay. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Alan, our grown son. He takes a bunch of friends out in this big Polaris. It's a 4-seater side-by-side, big motor and all that stuff. So he calls me and he says, hey, could you help me? And I said, yeah, what's the matter? And he goes, well, he says, I had a little accident with the Polaris. And I said, okay, where do you want me to meet you? And he goes, Granite Dells Road. He says, just drive down until you see us. And I said, okay. I said, what do I need to bring? And he goes, the horse trailer. And I go, the horse trailer? And he goes, yeah, the horse trailer. And I said, so we're hauling this home in a horse trailer? And he goes, yeah. So I get there, and the whole front end's blown off of it, if you remember.
I thought it was the rear, but, yeah, no. I know one of them was blown off of it.
The front end's blown off of it. So it takes us and 40 other guys that we stop on Granite Dell to lift the front into the horse trailer, and we can never lift the back into the horse trailer. What we don't understand is when the left front got blown apart, it applied the brakes. That's the reason we could never slide it and get it into the horse trailer. So we came up with the brilliant idea that we were going to rope it into the back of the horse trailer, and we were going to drag it home with the rear wheels on the ground.
I remember that. And so, you made Alan sit in it.
Alan sit in it because he wrecked it.
That's right.
So he's in the quad, and then all of a sudden we've been gone a mile, and he starts screaming bloody murder. And I look in my rearview mirror, and there's a lot of smoke back there. Mm-hmm. So I pull over. He jumps out of the quad, and he goes, it's on fire, it's on fire. Well, what we didn't understand was that when he blew the left front tire off, the left front tire bent the brake pedal and caused it to apply the brakes with tremendous force. So we didn't know that the back tires were locked up. So when we start dragging it, we just smoked the rear brakes.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I remember that was a mess.
Yeah, your little son.
Well, I'm surprised you found 40 guys out on Granite Dells Road, though.
I guarantee you. I can guarantee you. Alan had
that's
three.
That's another embellished story.
Just a minute. They're better when you embellish. There was Alan and his three guys. And there was me, and I took a guy. There were six, and we at least had four, five, or six other guys that stopped and asked. And that's a conservative number.
That's under 20, then. Okay, go ahead.
You know, you're
2 minutes.
Your radio career is almost over.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I have a lot to do out in the barn.
Yeah. You're going to have a lot more to do because you're going to be sleeping out in the barn. This portion of
my little house. Huh?
That's right. Yeah, and the bathroom, I'm going to turn the heater off in the bathroom.
No way.
This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Air Park Auto Service. Nadine and Stacy opened Air Park Auto Service in 1985, about the same time Renee and I opened our shop. They're located on Raintree, just east of Hayden, which is just south of Bell, or what's that, Frank Lloyd Wright Boulevard. They're still family-owned and operated. Stacy passed away a few years ago, but Nadine is in charge, and this truly is a lady. A female-operated repair shop. They've always been on my best car repair shops list for years and years. They're a state-of-the-art facility, clean and green, and they have the latest diagnostic tools, and they service most makes and models of vehicles, including all kinds of trucks.
1 minute.
So if you live in the North Scottsdale area and you don't already have a shop, or perhaps you are more comfortable talking with a lady in a lady-created environment, and certainly a lady who writes the personnel policy and the manual of procedure, then maybe Air Park Auto, again, on Raintree, just east of Hayden, would be the repair shop that you would go. Next hour, we got an open bank, so you can jump in right now, and you can get on. We're going to be back, and it's by about a minute and a half till the top of the hour, then about 3 minutes worth of commercials. So you're going to have to wait about 5 minutes. Go ahead and correct me, Mrs. Mathematician. And say goodbye to Renee, because this will be her last radio
this is
show.
My last hour.
Yeah, this is her last. No, it isn't. You promised you'd do both. Renee,
think you were kicking me off.
Her radio, your radio show career is over soon. We'll be back right after this.
Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. We're on our last hour of the car show every Saturday here from 10 to noon. We're talking about car repair issues. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair, and they're the kindest, the just straight arrow kind of people you'd ever want to meet in your life. Since 1970, they've been providing expert auto and light truck repair. They have ASC certified technicians. They follow up with friendly reminders to let you know when your vehicle may be due. So it's never really been easier or more convenient to keep your vehicle in top-notch shape than if you use Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're the only shop in Mesa that I put my name behind. They're located on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley, south side of the road, Thompson's Auto Repair. And if you have a good shop, then you should stay there. If you're not sure about your shop, then try Thompson's and then compare the two of them. That's the easy way to do it. Let's go to Alan. Alan, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Oh, Alan. Hi, how are you? Hey, Alan, your mother and I were having an argument, okay?
Alan? What else is new? I'm just kidding. I can tell you up front, I'm on mom's side. Whatever it is, I'm on mom's side.
There you go.
Okay, fair enough. That's the way it's always been. He's your twin sister.
No.
Okay,
he's
Alan,
my son.
Do you remember when you broke down on Granite Dells Road and you blew the left front suspension clean off the big quad?
Yes.
Okay.
The big Polaris,
big Polaris side-by-side.
Yes.
What's that called, a Razor?
Ranger.
Okay. You called me and I came out.
Group.
Okay. You called me and I came out with the horse trailer. So there was me and I think Phil was with us. And then there was you and a couple of other people that came out of the quad. And then as we tried to get, I think we got the front end okay in the quad, but we couldn't really get the back end. And we didn't find out till later why we couldn't. But there was people that stopped on the road. How many people, plus or minus, do you think there was on the road?
You called for that?
I didn't call him. He called in.
Oh, okay.
Plus or minus, how many people were there helping us trying to load that stupid quad into the horse trailer?
A lot. There was a lot of people.
Okay.
Alan, you said you're on my side. Was there 40 people on Granite Dells Road?
I don't know about 40.
Yeah, there you go.
There was a significant amount.
Maybe like 20.
If you remember, I don't know. I don't. I can tell you that we couldn't get it in the back, and we actually had to drive it back, hanging out of the back, and so the back tires were on.
No,
on the asphalt.
That's my story. I told him, and then we drove it, a couple of miles before the smoke started billowing out and you start yelling, and we found out that when you blow the left front suspension off, that moved the pedal and it applied the brakes, so we smoked the back brakes. But we were stopping people that were going in and out of Granite Dells asking them to help us.
40 of them?
Yeah, that was my point.
Well,
I told him today on the radio.
There was probably 10 in our party, and there was probably 10 or 15 or 20 that stopped and attempted to help us.
Okay, I'm closer than
you are. We're getting close. Okay,
right.
Whatever.
Hey, listen, I want to thank you for calling, and it's nice that you listen to the radio show every once in a while. But this is your mother's last show, so you should take advantage of that because this is the last show she'll be on.
To get off for, you know, days and weeks, but I finally got it today. I think I got off. Alan.
Yeah, it's a situation where you don't come on the radio show and take issue with the host's stories.
Well, that's not hard.
But people do like my stories, don't they?
Oh, there's no question about that.
Okay.
People wonder where I get it from.
Yeah, well, and then the slight embellishment just makes it a lot more fun. So
yeah.
It polishes the story off.
There you go. Yeah, thank you, son. I'll give you a raise Monday morning. Thank you for that. All right, let's go on and let's talk to Paul. Paul, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. It's great to listen to you guys. It sounds like I'm in my own house.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Mark, my wife has a grocery car, a 1998 Chevy Cavalier with 40,000 miles, and I've owned it since it had about 15,000 on it.
Okay.
And in the last 15 years or so, I've taken it to four different garages to try to stop a leak that is on the front of the car, inside the right front wheel. And they all tell me they've got it fixed, and within a week or two, it starts a little drip again, and I'm back to cleaning out my drip pan every month or so.
Okay.
It's gotten to the point where it's just really irritating me now. I want to get it fixed, but I can't take it back to any of the places I've been because they couldn't fix it fully to start
All right.
with.
Well, I need some more information, and I need to ask you some questions. What color is the leak?
It is a motor oil. It is clear with a slight amber color to it.
Okay. Well, I don't buy motor oil. You wouldn't be the first one that made that mistake. So what I need you to do is I need you to put your tip of your finger in a big spot of that and then walk over there and wash it off underneath the sink. And if it bubbles around and leaves a film on your finger and you see the water beading off of it, then you're right. But if it washes off your finger and that doesn't bead the water, then you're wrong. And it could easily be brake fluid. It could easily be water, a coolant, dirty coolant, or clean coolant. It could be either one of those. So what have these, in a nutshell, what have these four people done?
They have checked out the,
No, I need to know. I need to know what repairs they've done. What did they do to attempt to fix your leak? What's been done?
They tried to replace gaskets and a plate that they said was dripping oil and it was running down from that. And the others were so far back, I don't remember exactly what they said they did.
Well, you need to gather up that information because the question is this a thick grease out of the axle, because that's front-wheel drive? Is this motor oil, or is this transmission fluid? So that's what really needs to be addressed is we got to figure out what we're looking for. So it's entirely possible.
I'm sure that it's oil.
Okay. Well,
I am sure that it's oil.
Okay, that didn't work for you four times though. Did it?
Right.
Okay,
it did not.
It did not. So you need to change. It is not in your best interest to walk in and tell them what's leaking. It's not, and the shop should be dumb for letting that happen. I would suggest that good shops say, Paul, you bring it over here, and you leave it here for 24 hours. I'm going to park it right there in my shop, and I'll know exactly where the oil leak is. I'll triangulate the oil leak. I'll know exactly where it's dripping from, and I'll know exactly what it is. And you say, well, how much will that cost? And most shops are going to say, nothing. But we need to see it. Now, people come in sometimes, and they'll bring us a piece of paper, and they'll say, okay, well, this piece of paper is in the center of the wheel, so the front edge is in the center wheel. This side of the paper is even with this part of the car, blah, blah, blah. That's a little bit more difficult, but that's better. But we need to see where the leak is at, and we need to see what it is. Now, what part of town do you live in right now?
North Central, 32nd Street in East Cactus.
Okay, well, you're still close to Kelly Clark there at 40th and Bell. He's the guy I've got up there. Unless you go west and you go on the I-17, then Kurt's at Bell and Action at Deer Valley on the I-17. Those guys are good. But they're going to want to have the car for a while. And then once you get it fixed and you know that it's fixed, it might not be too late, depending on how long it's been, for you to go back to one or two or three of the shops and say, in a nice way, is there any kind of a refund associated with this? Because, you know, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, and you were one of the four, and then this actually fixed it, and so I am free of that. And this has been going on based on your repair order for, you know, 16 months. So I was just wondering if you wanted to reevaluate that and if there was any kind of a refund base, you know, that you would offer me. That's a nice way to ask if you want to pay for your mistake. So you got to get it fixed first, but I do it that way.
Well, that sounds great. Yeah, I know the Kelly Clark folks, so I can take it there. They haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, just take it overnight. Just make it easy on them and just say, you know, I want to leave it here. Now, if you want, I'll bring it Friday afternoon, and I don't know if they're open on Saturday or not.
I was just looking that up. Okay. I'm not sure either.
And you, or on Saturday night, you drop it off Saturday afternoon.
They are on Saturday.
Okay, mm-hmm. So then you drop it off. What's their hours to set on Saturday?
8 to 4.
So at 4 o'clock, you say, I'm going to arrange to bring it in at 3:30. You park it in one place, and on Monday morning, you check it for the leak. And that would be perfect. And here's the deal. You're not taking up a bay because they're not open anyway. Mm-hmm. So that would be an ideal situation.
2 minutes.
All righty.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck to you, Paul. Ed, how are you today? What can we do for you?
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Yes, sir, I can. Yes, Mark, I'm not that familiar with the cars. I have a 530i BMW 2006 with 150,000 miles on it. I took it to the shop to change the oil, and they are telling me that the valve cover is leaking oil. But I never noticed any leak or any reduction in the oil. And they are telling me that I have to change the casket or something like that.
Yes.
Is that any other things that I can do to make sure that is what it is?
Well, what you should have done is you should have said,
1 minute.
Gosh, I
have 1 minute.
Can you explain why I don't see anything on the floor? I mean, how about you and I walk outside, let's pop the hood of my BMW, you show me what you're seeing, and then I guess my question would be, politely, why aren't I seeing that on the floor in my garage? Now, I want to tell you the answer to that. We got weeping, we got seeping, we got leaking, and we got a flood. Okay? The first two are not likely to hit the ground. Weeping and seeping. So the oil comes through the gasket, it creates a small oil film, and there's a little dirt that attaches to it, and all of a sudden, my God in heaven, we have to do the gaskets. And I'll bet those gaskets were $300 to maybe $500?
Correct. Close to $600
yeah.
For this.
Okay, so here's my shoot from the hip answer, okay? If you don't see any oil on the ground and you're not adding oil between oil changes, then I think it's more likely. Here's my attorney in me.
Okay.
It's more likely than not that you don't have a situation that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
So I said before, Ed, our industry is in tatters right now. Technicians are leaving shop looking for greener grass. Our business is slowed to an unbelievable slow rate. Cars are being made better. And a lot of the stuff that we used to do at 30,000, 60,000, and 90,000 all needs to be done at 100,000. So that means the customer doesn't need all this flushes, all these fluids, all the spark plugs, the timing belt. They don't need that till 100,000 miles. So all of a sudden we have this problem. And as a result of that, we have shops talking about an oil leak. Now, they could have just as easily said this. Hey, Ed, we've got a little bit of weeping and seeping at the valve cover. It really doesn't need to be done now. Let me give you an estimate for it. It's not going to be a lickety-split kind of job. It's going to be a pretty in-depth job. But when you start seeing oil on the ground, I wanted to be the first one to tell you that I think that's the valve covers. Now, another thing, Ed, is that when the valve covers leak, they can leak oil on the exhaust manifold. So if you ever see a little bit of blue smoke wisping through the cracks of the hood, then that gasket's got worse. So I wrote it up on your ticket. I put my bid on your ticket. Right now, we need to keep an eye on that. Thank you very much, Ed.
It's not going to cause you a tow.
Thank you.
That's exactly. Those are the two different ones. So, mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take a break. But if the lines are wide open, I don't have any more family members calling in.
Good.
You didn't call your mother and have her call in, did you?
No.
Because your mother would say, my husband must have hit his head before he allowed you to marry his daughter.
That's right.
That's what she would say. Mm-hmm. Your mother's a great mother.
I know.
I couldn't have asked for a better mother-in-law. I got it. All right. Come
I'm
on.
I'm just trying to help you.
No, you're trying
to. We got to take a break.
You're,
so
you're
I'm trying,
trying
to
correct
to get
me.
You
you're being my mother.
Out on time.
I don't like that. Boy, this is. Anyway, we'll be back right after this.
Said this.
Welcome back, everybody. 23 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to call us. Nobody's in front of you, 602-508-0960. I'm going to talk about S&S Tire, and I'll tell you why S&S Tire is really important to me. They opened up in 1976, and the father had 50 or 60 years of experience in the tire and repair business. Now the two boys have the business, and I know he couldn't be prouder, and I want to tell you, I'm pretty doggone proud myself. So they have three locations, S&S Tire does. They're in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have a complete line of tires, and this is how extensive their tires are. In your size, they might be able to give you a good, better, best price out the door. That helps you determine, well, maybe you're only going to keep the car another year, so maybe you don't need the better and best. Maybe you just want the good. So that's the kind of store they have. They have tires for your anything you've got, whether it's your farm equipment, golf equipment, lawn and garden equipment, ATVs, trailers, commercial tires, construction tires, as well as 100 million, and I'm exaggerating, passenger car tires.
Embellishing again.
Okay. So anyway, S&S Tire, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. It's easy. Stop by. They're going to look at your tire size. They're going to make sure it's the appropriate one for your car. You say, can I get an out-the-door price? Tell them what you want. Good, better, best, or just best, and see what they say. Takes you 15, 20
minutes.
Steve
is your next caller.
All righty, let's go to Steve. Steve, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have two questions. One, in the morning when you start your car, is there any advantage to, like, letting it just warm up before you drive it?
That is a great question, because he's talking specifically to me.
Okay.
And the answer is no. I am usually so doggone busy and so pressed for time that I'll start my diesel up and I'll set the controls and I'll put it in reverse and drive away. Now, I must tell you that I'm not going to throttle it up hard. I don't have to get on the freeway entrance ramp and put it to the floor. I'm going to drive it, you know, as if my wife was sitting next to me with a hot cup of coffee and her hand shook a little bit. I'm going to try to keep the coffee out of her lap, but I'm not going to abuse it, and I'm going to warm it up a little faster than if you're just going to sit there and idle. And I'll tell you, there's some negative with respect to sitting there and idling, because the motor's going to warm up faster under load, and as a result of that, your heater's going to work faster under load, and the motor's going to like it a lot better under load. But to go out and start your car and go back in and finish your coffee, kiss your wife goodbye, eat a tablespoon of oatmeal out of your son's bucket or what, like a bowl, then that's craziness.
Oh,
but that's the way. Now, I want to draw the line here at about 2000. 2000 and newer, I think you're far better off to start it up, buckle your seatbelt, tune your radio in. That's going to buy you 10, 15 seconds. The oil pressure's already there. Put it in reverse and drive it as if you had a cup of coffee between your legs from McDonald's. And then, you know, after you've gone a half a mile to a mile, then just drive normally. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, then if I have a battery that's been sitting in there and it's kind of dead, and I go to take it out and charge it up and put it back, you had given some safety advice of which, like, don't put the negative on first or something like that.
Okay. Negative off first and on last. Think of it this way. Negative, first F comes before L and last. That's how I think of it. Actually, my wife thinks of it that way. So it's negative.
I've never thought of it.
Negative first and negative last. And here's why. So many times, if you do the positive first or the positive last, your wrench will slip off the positive cable, not off of it, but it'll slip while it's on it, and the wrench will hit a ground. And I mean to tell you, the sparks and the heat will make you run like a little girl. And
right.
and it'll burn your hand, and it'll smoke your fusible links, and it might melt your cable. So there's so much negative. So negative first off and negative last on. That way, if your wrench hits a ground, no harm, no foul.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Steve. 602-508.
Tom is your next caller.
0960, 602-508-0960. Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark.
Mark, 2 minutes.
The question I had was on low battery voltage. So I've got an older battery. I'm nursing along. Sometimes I'll check it and it's down 12.3 or less. Is that going to cause the early demise of the alternator?
No. Once you drop, you know, down pretty close to 10 volts, more. And what kind of car are we talking about first?
That's old Honda Accord.
Okay. Is it a 90 or a 2000? Okay. No, the answer is no. Here's what causes the alternator to give up the ghost, and that is you're driving the car, and let's pretend that the battery cable comes loose, or pretend that one of the battery cables completely loses its connection. At that point, the regulator says to the alternator, oh my gosh, the voltage just dropped to zero.
1 minute.
And the alternator says, what do you want me to do? And the regulator says, wind up and give me all you got. Well, the alternator is only capable of doing that for just a little while before it heats up and starts throwing solder and popping all the diodes, and then it has an early death. That's when the alternator goes bad, is when we lose one of the cable connections and the car is still running. So other than that, I think when the car goes click, 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 and the solenoid is doing that, I think it's time for a battery.
Okay. In conjunction with that, the motorhome syndrome, I call it, you know, that sits and sits. You know, you might have to jump it to start it.
Right.
Basically, you're running on the alternator. You know, unless you drive a long distance on that, that's not killing the alternator?
No, because once you I got to take a break. Stay right there. When we come back, I'm going to finish, and I have a comment about the other questions as well. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. All right, 11 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 11 o'clock. All righty. We were talking to Tom, and Tom said that he had an older battery in a car, and every once in a while it got down to like 12.3 or so. And he was concerned about that, and he was concerned that if the battery dropped off a lot, would the alternator burn itself out if it tried to charge the battery? So there's two questions there. First of all, Tom, if you're still listening, we need to make sure that the battery's dropping voltage and there isn't something wrong in the car that's causing the drop of the voltage. So what we do is we disconnect the negative cable and we take a battery, you know, a voltage reading, and let's say it's 12.8. And then we let the car sit for as many days as we can, maybe over a weekend. And we check it in the morning and in the night of 2 or 3 days. We need it to be at 12.8, 12.8, 12.8, 12.8. All right? Then we hook the negative cable back up and we do the same kind of test. And if it goes 12.8, 12.6, 12.5, 12.4, 12.3, then something in the car is causing that battery to drop voltage. You see, when we isolate the battery all by itself, we expect it to be stationary. When we put the battery in the car and all of a sudden we see a decline in the voltage, then we know for sure the car is causing that. So is it the diodes in the alternator? Is the trunk light stuck on? You know, there's so many things that could be wrong. You ask about the RV. And you said when you jumpstart the RV, what's the difference there with respect to jumpstarting his Honda? Isn't the alternator going to work too hard and destroy itself trying to charge the battery? The answer is no, double no. The issue is when you start the battery, when you start the RV up, the battery is going to jump to about 15 volts. And depending on the alternator, 60 amps, 90 amps, or 125 amps. So I want you to picture a fire hose, a big old giant fire hose in a 55-gallon drum. It doesn't take long for that fire hose to bring that drum up to snuff, to fill that drum. Your alternator, not that fast, I'm just trying to draw a picture, that your alternator is going to be like that. So once the alternator starts charging the batteries, the voltage is going to come up, and the amperage is going to drive the voltage up, but the alternator is going to continue to charge the battery. Once the voltage stabilizes between 13 and 14, 5, maybe 13 and 15 volts, then the alternator throttles back and just kind of keeps the voltage where it's at. If you turn around and then turn on a whole bunch of lights in the motorhome and the motor's running, the alternator's working, it'll see that and it'll just add a little bit of electricity to compensate for the electricity you're using. So that's kind of how it works, and that's the story I'm sticking to. All righty, under the hood, we want to talk about Kurtz Auto. Kurtz Auto's a good guy. You hear me talk about Kurtz Auto at Bell on the I-17 in the northeast corner because Kurt and Jeff and Eric are really good people. Kurt owns the place. Jeff runs the front counter. And Eric runs the shop, or he's the lead technician, or he's one of the technicians at Kurt's shop. But Jeff and Eric are both ASC Master Certified Technicians, and I'm kind of impressed with that. So you got a shop foreman, or you got a service writer, or you've got the service manager that's an ASC master. There's no likelihood that some young buck with three whiskers is going to lie to the service manager when he has that kind of credentials about the car. So there's kind of a checks and balance system that he has that few others might have. Kurtz is an independent, family-owned, operated facility. They work on foreign, domestic, and diesel vehicles. He's going to be 30 years in business next month. And Kurt's going to be on the show with us April 1st on Saturday at 10 to 12 for a live remote and an open house at Kurt's shop, which is at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. So on April 1st, if you want to come see the show live, we're going to be live at Kurt's Automotive, and that's I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. And we're going to have a good time. And it's an open house, and I suspect he's going to have food and drinks. Or he could have donuts.
Yeah.
Or he could go to Dunkin' Donuts. So he's going to have something.
Yeah, his staff's going to be there, and they're going to meet you and talk to you. They're not normally open on Saturdays, so they're opening just Saturdays, and you can come down and meet Jack the Ripper and Snow White, and that'll be good.
Well, speaking of Jack the Ripper and Snow White, Gil, I know we're up against the time frame here, but we're going to have a little poll here.
Okay.
If you like my stories, then you go to mark@salemboysauto.com. mark@salemboysauto.com and say, I like Mark's stories. Or if you don't, say, I don't like Mark's stories.
Okay.
Are you
going to change?
Just a minute.
1 minute.
Just a minute. Now, if you think I should give Renee the boot on the radio show, then vote give Renee the boot at mark@salemboysauto.com. Mark, you can't vote. She's already got her phone in her hand. She's already ready to vote.
No, I'm not.
What are you doing with your phone in your hand?
Check
it out. Antique stores, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly right. So if you want to say you like my stories or you don't, or if you want to say Renee gets the boot, mark@salemboysauto.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll let the chips fall where they may.
Perfect.
Sister.
Perfect.
All right.
They say they want me and not you.
You know what?
Andy.
How about that? I'm okay with that.
That's right.
And if you guys can answer the car questions, you've been around me long enough, then that's fine. I can go ride horses or go on the tractor all Saturday, and I don't have to do this like I've been doing for 88 years, supporting your spending habits at Nordstrom's.
Oh,
nanner,
my goodness.
Nanner. All right. 1140, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. My name's Mark Salem, and you're stuck with me for another 20 minutes, whether you like it or not. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by IMM Auto Service. They've been fixing cars right and caring for their customers since 1972. Why would you choose IMM Auto Service? Well, first of all, they can work on just about every car in your garage, whether you have a Chevrolet, a Ford, a Toyota, a Honda, a Chrysler, any of those. But they specialize in Swedish, Italian, and Asian vehicles. So if you've got a Ford and a Volvo, or a Ford and a Saab, or maybe you got a Chevrolet and a Fiat, or maybe you've got a Chrysler and an Alfa Romeo, they can handle both of those. But they are especially good on the Volvo, Saab, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo. So they're in the northeast corner of Tempe. They serve South Scottsdale and West Mesa and all of Tempe and all of Phoenix because they are a one-of-a-kind shop. That's called IMM Auto Service. Let's go to the phones. Donald, you're up first, buddy. How can I help you?
Well, I'm glad you're there. Anyway, Mark, I love your show. Liquid Rock. I've got a final attack. I got a 2004 Chevy Astro. And I had some oil leaks and whatnot, so I replaced the oil and the cooler lines and everything. And, of course, I had to take the filter and the oil cooler off of the block, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I put it all back together, and everything's fine. Let's check it for leaks, you know. So we filled it up with fluid because I had drained the oil. So I put the old oil back in just to, get some pressure and whatnot. And I started up.
gauge looks fine. And I figured, well, I'll just go ahead and go around the front, pull the dipstick out, no oil on the dipstick. I'm going, ooh, strange. So I turned it back off. Went, checked the dipstick again, and no oil is getting returned to the oil pump, or oil pan. Any ideas of a plan of attack?
Well, no, that you can't have oil pressure and have what you think you have.
Okay.
Because the sump for the oil pump sits in the very bottom of the pan. So how can you have oil pressure and have, you know, thinking that you don't have any oil or any oil circulation? So one and one doesn't equal two. You just add a quart until you see it on the stick, and then just get it to the full mark, and you're done. But oil pressure says that the oil pump's working, and it. I mean, you're thinking that maybe that oil filter housing or that that assembly that you took off the front of the block where the oil cooler is attached, you're thinking there's some problem there. Well, that's not where we're picking up oil. We're picking up oil somewhere else. So if you don't have any oil pressure gauge issues, you don't have any red lights on the dash, then you just keep adding oil until you get to the dipstick, and there's a quart between an add and a full mark, and I'd put it on the full mark, and I'd move on from there.
All right, I'll check it out. Right. Hey, I appreciate the help, guys.
You betcha, you betcha. Hey, David, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi, Mark. Just had a question. Wanted to get your opinion. Robert did.
Hey, David, you're breaking up. Hold on just a minute. You're breaking up real bad, so if you're on Bluetooth, then we need to come off that. If you could, please.
Yeah, can you hear me right now?
Yeah, that's a lot better. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to get your opinion on motor extension with both of us.
Hey, Gil, why don't we take him and put him on hold real quick and work through that audio problem and connect me to Walt. David, just stay right there. But you and Gil are going to kind of work on that. Maybe you're far out of town or something like that. Let's go to Walt while we work on David's connection. Walt, good morning to you.
Good morning, Walt. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
I'm a new listener to your show, and I enjoy listening to all of the tips and everything. My question is, I'm in Sun City in the West Valley, and I'm looking for a place that you would recommend for a wheel alignment for my Toyota Tacoma.
Oh, I would go to S&S, Peoria Sunrise and Goodyear. Yeah, Peoria. I think the Surprise S&S tire, because they do alignments. They sell lots of tires. So they certainly are good with balance problems, alignment problems. And let me ask you a question. Why do you need an alignment?
I'm starting to drift to the left a little bit. I do need new tires, so I'm in the process of correcting both of those issues.
Okay. I like what you say, but I just want you to make a constructive suggestion. Here's the deal. We don't do alignments unless we have to do some work first. So we're going to take the front tires and cross them over. And what happens if it drifts to the right instead of the left?
Then one of the wheels isn't balanced.
One of the tires is causing the pull. So when they were the original way, the left front was pulling to the left. And when we crossed the fronts, now we pull to the right. So that's not uncommon. So that's number one, is we need to do that. Now, I tell you what, a lot of times we'll cross the fronts and the car will go straight down the road and we just give it back and we just say, there you go. And we don't do an alignment. Now, another thing is people bring new tires, they put new tires on the car, and then they bring it to me for an alignment, and I would have given anything if I could have seen the wear on the old tires. And you're going to offer them that, because let's pretend that in your particular car, let me see how I'm going to do this. The outside edge is wearing a lot. That's a camber problem. So the outside edge is wearing a lot, which is going to make that car pull left. So if I cross the fronts and it still pulls left, and I look at that tire and it's got the outside edge wear, one and one equals an alignment. So just tell them, I want you to look at my tire wear, and I think I need an alignment, and tell me what your procedure is. And I'm quite sure they're going to say, we're going to cross those fronts first. But that's going to help you, because so many times guys come in and they tell us to align it, and then we align it. Then they come back and say, well, you didn't fix my problem. And my response is you didn't tell me about a problem. And they said, well, it's got to drift to the left. And I said, gosh, I wish you'd have told me that at the beginning. I go out and cross the tires. Everything's fine. I give them the keys and say, here you go. I fixed it. But I'm not going to give you a refund on the alignment because you told me to align the car. You diagnosed your own problem and you were wrong. You can't expect me to pay for your bad diagnosis, but I did fix it for you, and I cross-rotated your tires. So that's kind of how it works. Does that make sense?
It certainly does.
Okay.
Perfect. I appreciate the information.
Good luck to you, Walt. Thank you very much. Thank you. We got David back.
Let's go ahead.
David?
Oh, wait.
Okay, David, go ahead.
Can you hear me okay now?
I'm trying my best, buddy.
Okay. I was here on the traffic on the morning radio show. There was a lot of rollovers, and a lot of them are the higher-profile vehicles. I'm looking at getting a full-size SUV. I like the Toyota Sequoia. But I noticed the new Tahoes and Suburban seem to have a little bit lower profile of the latest generation. I'm just wondering if maybe that's making them a little safer for that particular issue.
Yeah, so what I hear you say is you're concerned about perhaps getting a vehicle that's a little top-heavy or has the propensity to roll over or roll on its side more than all the rest of the vehicles.
Well, or just, is there any rating system that rates things like that you can kind of use as a guide?
No, because when a vehicle rolls over on its side, it has variables there. There's speed. There's weight. I just bit my tongue. There's weight distribution. There's winds, which is called the environmental concerns. So when you have all of those, then the answer is I don't know if you guys know, you probably did, but there was a big propane tanker that turned over in Payson the other day.
Yesterday, yeah.
Yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I mean to tell you, this was a big tanker. He was going way too fast. He tried to make a corner. He rolled over on his right side. So, but I also want to tell you this, David. I have never seen... And I do accident cases. I'm not the reconstruction guy. I'm the mechanical guy. But I've never seen a concern that had to do with a high-profile vehicle and a rollover that couldn't be explained by weight distribution, speed, or wind. So I think that all of those can be done. If this is a situation, and we've had motorhomes with a height of 14 feet,
yeah,
and I never was concerned with that vehicle rolling over, providing that my wife would not consume alcohol before she drove.
So, okay.
Yeah, so...
All right, well,
okay. Well, listen, thank you. That was a good question, but I'm just old enough to know that that's really not an issue in my world. But last but not least, speed, weight distribution, and environmental concerns is going to cause that 99 times out of 100. Okay, do you have anything you want to say before we wrap this up?
Oh, well, you were going to talk about that 60 International that guy called you on.
God,
I don't know if you have time to finish it up, but Lonnie, I know,
calls.
You talked for a long time.
Lonnie, yeah, an hour and 12 minutes. Lonnie calls. He took his 60 International truck, and Lonnie's the kind of guy that's kind of telling everybody how to fix it. So he ends up with an overhaul. And he's not happy because when he gets back, it's a $5,200 deal. He doesn't pay with a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time he's ever used this shop.
Ooh.
So he pays, and he walks across the street and gives him a cashier's check.
Mm-hmm.
He picks up the car, and the clatter and some of the oil leak, I think it was an oil leak, still there.
Oh, boy.
So then he takes it to shop number two, and shop number two says, there is no indication that the timing cover out the front of this motor has been off because the bolts are all greasy and everything doesn't show. Then they take the heads off of it, and there's ridge rings on the top, which should have been removed during an overhaul. And there are significant factors that clearly show, that's my son, doesn't he do that? That clearly show.
Correct,
that,
is what he
that,
does.
That this wasn't overhauled.
Okay.
It looks and smell like Lonnie took a screwing, okay?
Yeah.
So now he's got two shops involved. So now he wants to know what to do, and he wants to charge him with fraud. So he has two choices. He can go to law enforcement, but law enforcement's going to say, where's your evidence?
Yeah.
And he says he's going to testify, and I said, but you're not an expert.
Well, and somebody else has already been in there and touched it. So
everybody
really,
has.
Yeah,
So Lonnie can't testify on his behalf.
Mm-hmm.
He's not an expert. I have to, and so he has to hire someone like me. Now, I'm not the cheapest guy in town, but I'm not the $400 an hour guy in town either.
Right.
So Lonnie has to hire an expert, and then he has to hire an attorney, and then he has to sue the guy, or he can go to the attorney general's office with what he has and hope they file fraud charges against him. But keep in mind that this has already been touched by other people,
right,
and it may or may not be assembled right now, which means it has to be reassembled again. Then if the AG's office or anybody else looks at this, then there's always questions on the rebuild. Well, and the shop may say, we didn't do that. We didn't do that. It didn't need it.
Yeah.
Then there's an issue with rings. Well, the pistons haven't been out, so all this hypothesis about what the rings look like is just that, a wild guess, because you can't see the rings unless you pull the pistons out. So everybody's looking at the rings and saying, well, this and this and this, but in fact, no one's pulled the pistons out.
So the lesson is, don't go someplace you've never been before to have an engine rebuilt, obviously.
This is so ugly.
Yeah, that's not good.
And I did some review checking, and it ain't pretty.
Not good.
And I want to tell you, I have some past history, and I would have never recommended this shop.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never allowed them to be on my best car repair shops list. I wouldn't even have done any examination. I would have not even run them through the vetting process. It would have been an immediate no thank you. So I'm well aware of the shops that misbehave and take advantage of people. But from Lonnie's eyes,
mm-hmm,
and from talking to shop owner number two,
yeah,
it is more likely than not that he got taken to the cleaners. And what they did was, and keep in mind, they never did fix the cladding.
Right.
And that's a key.
Did you tell him shop two could possibly help testify against shop one, or
they could, but the question is the judge is going to say, explain to me why you're an expert,
mm-hmm,
and have you been certified in any courtroom in the state of Arizona,
yeah,
and has anybody designated you as an expert, because I had to go through that as well. Mm-hmm. So it's, I don't know if
one
the
minute.
Word's voir dire, I think that's the word, where they test you, the judge tests you. What kind of credentials do you have? How many years have you been doing this? How many motors have you overhauled? How many times have you been deposed? How many times have you been a witness in a trial? On and on and on. And then they give you the sign of the cross and they say, you are an expert.
You can do it.
Yeah. So that's the whole situation.
Okay.
All righty. My email address is mark@salemboysauto.com. You can send an email to me and I personally will answer your email. I would like it very much if you would include a phone number, because inevitably I have questions. In addition to that, I'm going to call you from a blocked phone line for obvious purposes. So if you get a no data, or if you get a blocked number or no caller ID, it's probably going to be me. You can answer and say, is this Mark? And if I don't say, yes, this is Mark, then you can hang up on me or hang up on that person. It's not too late. Mark@salemboysauto.com. Drive safely, wear your seatbelt. God bless you, and see you next Saturday.